Hello and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, the podcast where I show my wife Dragon Ball Z, she shows me Gilmore Girls, and we both try to find some kind of common ground. I'm Grant.
And I'm Paige.
And this week we have the first of our special returning guests for this season. You know her, you love her, Gilmore Ball Z's bratty little sister, all caps Kiri. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, beloved listeners. I am so happy to be back. See, the thing is that I always know that it's been too long since I've guested on the podcast because it starts taking me a really long time to finish the episodes when they come out, right? Like, so the Jenny's Wedding episode, that's like 43 minutes long. It took me like 2 hours to finish because I just kept pausing, like, whenever you said something about whatever ridiculous, terrible failure of screenwriting was taking place, and I would just stop and think to myself, oh my god, I can't believe they did that, or oh my god, why didn't they do this thing, it would have been so much better, or oh my god, that's not how being gay or being a human works. And then I just realized I was just literally thinking through what I would be saying if I was a guest on the podcast, so that's how I know it's been too long.
Yeah, the other thing that's important for the audience to know is that in previous episodes, because before the pandemic, Kiri lived down the street from us, so we'd record in person. Kiri is not down the street right now because of the pandemic, but also that means that Kiri had to send us a sound check because the audio can vary widely. So she sent us 5 minutes of her reading from the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants book, and if I have to know that, the audience has to know that too.
So, Kiri, it has been some time since you've been with us. You did not join us last season.
No, I did not.
So a lot has happened in that time, but when I don't know how far back you've mentioned this episode, but this episode has been on your list of ones you wanted to join us for a bit. So the audience already knows how much you love Gilmore Girls. The audience already knows that you don't have much experience with Dragon Ball Z, and we'll have some fun talking about that, because boy howdy was this an episode to see out of context. but why, I mean, other than the obvious, why specifically do you want a guest out of all of the episodes in this wacky alternate universe Paladino-less season? Why did you pick this one?
Something happens in this episode, and I'm not going to say what it is. I'm going to just leave that there, let the tension build for the listeners.
You're going to give me the opportunity to drop it on the Dragon Ball side of our listeners?
Yes, yes. This is, that's your deal. That's for you. I understand that. I just want to say that a particular infamous plot point happens in this episode that is going to have some consequences on the rest of the season. And just for a hint of what's to come, what I'm saying is that I have come with my Seventh-day Adventist Bible in hand to speak on the final brutal killing blow to the character arc of Lane Kim.
Wait, do you actually have a Seventh-day Adventist Bible?
No, I do not. That was a joke.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the same as the Bible. I could be wrong. Seventh-day Adventists call me out, but I think that's just the Bible.
Yeah, no, I don't know anything. I know nothing at all.
Let's be real here. Even if Seventh-day Adventists just use the same Bible as everybody else, the Seventh-day Adventist church that Mrs. Kim grew up in, or I guess didn't grow up in, because apparently her mother is Buddhist, the Seventh-day Adventist church that Lane grew up in definitely used a Bible with some parts taken out or taken out of context.
Just the Song of Solomon's too dirty. Take it out.
Oh, yeah, no. Definitely nowhere near the Song of Solomon. So, okay. With all of that said, this week we watched episode 146 of Dragon Ball Z Kai and season 7, episode 2 of Gilmore Girls. So, before we get into everything that Kiri was just talking about, let's go to Paige first. Paige, what happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Actually, do you want to know what my first note is, what it says?
What does it say, Kiri?
It says, verbatim, oh my god, why is Majin Buu so ugly? No, 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 this design upsets me so much, make it stop, make it stop, make it stop. I didn't know what he looked like, you guys. I didn't know, listeners, I didn't know. It upset me. Anyway, continue.
I guess that's true, because you yourself have never been, you're really not much into a whole lot of anime in general, but you've also never been into Dragon Ball Z. And this is the parts of the series that are late enough that details of it aren't really part of the cultural zeitgeist the way that other things are. So I totally believe, yeah, you'd never seen Majin Buu until today.
Yeah. I don't know what the majority of the characters look like. Like, I know what Goku looks like, obviously, of course. Before I started listening to this podcast, in fact, I thought... Actually, it was when I started listening. I looked up some of the characters, and I distinctly recall thinking, wait, I was sure that Vegeta was the green one. Vegeta's not the green one? What?
His name sounds like vegetable, so that's a reasonable, like,
right.
I can see how you made that mistake. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's where I'm coming from with this. The point is that Majin Buu was shockingly ugly to me, and I was just very, very upset about it. Just very upset.
And that's a fair takeaway from this episode. As you'll remember, last week, Gotenks lied about there being one more move that he's got to ramp up the tension, and Piccolo, thinking they were all dead, destroyed the doorway to the hyperbolic time chamber. This week, that led to Majin Buu making a very upsetting revelation that he has no candy. He has no candy forever. Which is not quite true. Majin Buu, you could have had two candies, three if you waited long enough, but still, it's upsetting. I identified more with Majin Buu than I ever have before, just sitting in my pandemic house going, but I want candy. Where do I go to get candy? And for me, the answer is the store down the street where people are usually masked and probably be fine. But for Buu, the answer is nowhere forever after you make Piccolo into a candy bar. So he gets very mad and starts screaming. At some point here, Gotenks reveals that he had one more move, and he and Piccolo kind of argue with each other for a little bit over the fact that he had one more move and he didn't use it, and how was he supposed to know that Piccolo was going to destroy everything? Buu is still so upset about not having candy, he yells so loudly that he breaks a rift in time and space and reconnects the hyperbolic time chamber to the real world. So he goes back up onto the watchtower. Weirdly, his rip in time and space doesn't actually lead to where the hyperbolic time chamber is or to the place on Earth with candy. It just leads to the outside of the watchtower. But sure, why not? He goes out, and at this point it splits from two plots into three plots. Inside the hyperbolic time chamber, Piccolo and Gotenks think they're trapped. They take some time to yell at each other about whose fault this is, but eventually they figure out that maybe if they yell loud enough, they can also rip a hole in time and space, so they yell. That does nothing. Gotenks reveals that what he had up his sleeve was going into Super Saiyan 3, and he is able to use that and yell and rip a hole in time and space. The thing that really upsets me here, though, I want to say quickly, is that Gotenks is still on the I was waiting to bring out Super Saiyan 3 until it was the snazzy time, but I guess if we need it, I'll pull it out now. After he's heard that Buu is on the watchtower, and I'll get to it in a second, but his mother is probably dead. He already knew that. He was still waiting for a snazzy time. It's not until he gets to the watchtower and realizes that his mom is actually dead that he finally gets mad. That is where we leave Gotenks as Super Saiyan 3 on the watchtower, staring down Buu. So let's jump back to after Buu escapes. After Buu escapes from the hyperbolic time chamber onto the watchtower, he stares down some of the last human beings who are still alive. It's, you know, it's Marin, 18, Krillin, Bulma, Roshi, Yamcha, maybe? Who cares?
Yamcha, the Ox King.
The Ox King.
Dende and Popo.
Dende. And Chi-Chi.
No, Chi-Chi got turned into an egg and smashed.
Oh, right. She already got... Right, Chi-Chi's already dead. Videl.
And I think Puar?
Maybe Puar. It doesn't really matter because he's gonna turn them all into candy because he wants candy. He just has to sit and wait and figure out what kind of candy. Krillin, who just asked Bulma why she was so upset her kid was dead if she could just wait for the Dragon Balls, decides that this is not going to work. He doesn't want 18 and Marin to die, So he decides that Krillin, who is weaker than his wife and has already been brought back by the Dragon Balls once, is the perfect person to make a running dash towards Boo to get himself turned into chocolate, which just cuts off Boo's thinking process of what chocolate he wants. Like, he could have been in analysis paralysis forever, but Krillin forces his hand. Boo turns him into chocolate. He turns everybody into chocolate. All the Dragon Ball fighters who were on the Watchtower are now chocolate. And this is where we leave him until Gotenks comes back in. So those plots are reunited. Meanwhile, on the Supreme Kai planet, Gohan is still getting chanted over while Goku tries to figure out what's going on Earth while not letting Gohan know. It's kind of unclear if Gohan heard him anyway, but Goku is definitely telling him, no, everything's fine, don't worry about it, everything's fine, just sit there and they'll keep chanting while he watches all of this go down. So Goku knows exactly what's happening for a bit there. He thinks that all of the fighters on Earth are dead. And then later he knows that his kid, when in Gotenks form, went Super Saiyan 3 and is very proud. Meanwhile, Mr. Satan is roaming the wilds with his puppy. That's about all on that plot. Kiri, Grant, did I forget anything?
No, that was basically it. I mean, to be 100% clear, Boo eats everyone.
Yeah, to be clear, everyone is chocolate and eaten by Boo and in his tummy when Piccolo and Gotenks come back out.
Yeah, like Gotenks and Piccolo jump through the wormhole and Boo like still has chocolate smeared on his face as he's finished eating their families.
And he says that they're all comfortable and pats his belly. Yeah, it's pretty gross.
I just want to say, personally, on my end, this isn't a correction or anything. This is just a little anecdote, basically, but... So, I told my mom that I would be recording with you guys tonight, and so she knows about the podcast listeners. She's, like, aware of what it is. She's only listened to one episode because she's not as loyal an audience member as Paige's mom is, but, yeah, so she was aware, and at one point she came into the room to tell me something, and I paused the episode to talk to her, and Gotenks was making a particularly distraught, contorted facial expression, and my mom noticed it and pursed her lips, and all I said was, it's their thing, not mine.
Who said it was my thing?
Yeah. You see, I had to throw you under the bus to protect my reputation, considering that I only partake in really dignified, respectable media with rich intellectual concepts like Magic Pants.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the moment, and I know we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but I feel like it needs to be mentioned now, where the subtext finally became text in this episode. The key to saving the universe became screaming as much as you can.
No. I wrote a note for this too, where the exact quote, right, was, we're both gonna yell as loud as we can. And I wrote next to that, I'm just really happy that this is a line of dialogue. I hope it's self-aware.
I feel like it has to be.
Plot line. Like, this whole time in the hyperbolic time chamber, Trunks became self-aware and explained how Dragon Ball fights work. Gotenks became self-aware and started voicing what stalling techniques the Dragon Ball writers used to make these fights go forever, and now they're just yelling really loud to save the Earth. Done. Okay. I got it. We're at this point in the plot.
Pretty much.
What happened on Gilmore Girls, guys?
Oh my god. Okay, so we start with possibly the greatest cold open in the history of the show.
Yeah, it starts strong.
Yeah, and before we started watching this, you mentioned offhand to me that, you know, a lot of people say that Vineyard Valentine is the worst episode of the show, but this is also apparently a top contender for people's least favorite episodes of the show. And I definitely understand why in many respects, but I can't in good conscience call this the worst episode of the show with this cold open. We pick up, basically, I took it to imply exactly where we left off, with Luke driving away from Lorelei after just finding out that she slept with Christopher. And it's just Luke, he's driving, he looks grumpy, he's driving, he looks grumpy, and I'm like, okay, Luke, what are you doing? And then he pulls up in front of this nice brick building, and I go, oh, Luke. And he gets in, he goes into the building, he gets in the elevator, he rides it up, walks up to the door, knocks on the door. Christopher answers. He punches Christopher in the face, turns around, gets back in the elevator, and goes home. And that's it. Cue the opening theme. Like
good stuff.
It's perfect. So Luke punches Christopher. So I guess we'll just do the Luke plot then. So he punches Christopher, and then he has to get set at solving the crisis that he had before his larger crisis last episode, which was the fact that Kirk drove a car through his diner. So he's getting the front windows fixed. For some reason, TJ is helping him. Whatever. And so TJ, being the big palooka that TJ is, keeps being like, oh, hey, you know, you and Lorelai got, you should come with us to do this. Oh, you and Lorelai gotta do that. Oh, you know, Liz is pregnant, so she's real horny. You should knock up Lorelai, so she's horny all the time, too.
Yeah, just a reminder for Dragon Ball listeners, Liz is Luke's sister.
Yeah, yeah, just a reminder, yeah. It's yes. Yes, exactly.
Oh, dear.
TJ keeps poking the bear, poking the bear, poking the bear, and Luke clearly doesn't want to talk about it, and like he's not mentioning it because he just doesn't want to have this conversation with TJ, because who would? At one point he like goes to go get some paint stuff to paint up the window frames before the window guy shows up, and he bumps into Lorelai, and there's this scene. I can talk more about my frustrations with this scene later, but they're both at opposite ends of a crosswalk, and they're obviously headed toward each other. And they both kind of get this deer in the headlights look as they're waiting for the light to change. And then the light changes and they both have to walk. And they start to pass each other and then they get into a conversation. And Lorelai just says, I'm sorry. And he says, no, why are you sorry? You know, I'm okay. I'm fine. And she's like, oh, like, it's okay to not be fine. Like, I'm not fine. And then Luke, like, remember all that stuff I was saying last episode about how Luke was acting more like himself in this season? That all goes out the window in this scene as he just plays like the petty teenager of like, oh no, I'm totally fine. How could you not be fine? I'm 100% okay. I'm not mad or upset at all. Like, I'm doing great. How, you know, like, why don't you go talk to your boyfriend about it? Like, just act like a petty douchebag, whatever. It's a dumb scene and it carries on and then it ends. And so he shows up again to TJ, and TJ's just like, oh, the four of us should go on a double date, blah, blah, blah. Finally, he snaps and tells TJ, like, look, Lorelai and I broke up. And something that you said while we were watching this page that is very true is I really, really want to know what direction TJ got in most of his scenes, but especially in this moment. Because he drops everything he's doing and hugs Luke, but, like, it's not in a dramatic way. It's like an autonomous reflex in his body. Like, even TJ doesn't realize it's what he's doing. And, like, buries his face in Luke's chest and won't let go and says, you're going to be okay, Luke. You're going to be okay. So it's awkward, but he's like, look, you come over. We'll have you over for dinner tonight. It'll be great. We'll help you get your mind off it. So this is okay, fine. He goes to dinner at Liz and TJ's. They want to keep needling him about it, but he keeps, you know, saying he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about it. And finally, like, Liz gets him to... Liz is a disaster in the kitchen, by the way. The first course is Jell-O cups because the oven's broken and they knew the oven was broken and she forgot to fix it. So the main course is cold after however long in the oven. And she doesn't realize the oven's cold when she opens it. And so she finally starts talking about, like, yeah, no, I think it was kind of inevitable. Like, you two, there's this really long tortured metaphor about the space-time continuum and the movie The Lake House with Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves. Like, oh, you two were in the same place, but not at the same time. And so, like, you were on different planes going in different places, or like that time travel movie with Sandra Bullock, but also kind of like Speed. And it, whatever, it's a scene that's longer than it needs to be. And Luke finally is just like, no, it was nothing like that. We just weren't right for each other. Like, we just weren't right for each other. And that's okay. And he says, I'm going to go get food. I'll make you something on the stovetop, whatever. And he goes to the grocery store. And Lorelai's also at the grocery store because they both, well, Lorelai decided to go there instead of Dosey's so that she wouldn't run into Luke, and she ran into Luke. And he's buying whatever, and they see each other in the frozen foods aisle. they have this other awkward confrontation in the grocery store, and she says, like, I forget even what she says, whatever, it doesn't matter, who cares. He's like, hey, you know, we just aren't right for each other, we're too different, that's okay, you don't belong with me, you belong with a guy like Christopher, and that's okay. We should stop fighting it, you go back to being you, I'll go back to being the guy who serves you coffee. Some implication of maybe we'll go back to being friends, but maybe not. And, you know, we'll just let that be it, and it's okay. And so Lorelai is obviously upset about this and shuffles away.
To what credit, to what little credit Luke deserves, he does acknowledge that he was a dick earlier in the crosswalk.
He does, you're right, you're right. He does apologize for the way he was acting in the crosswalk earlier and acknowledges that he is upset, but he will be okay. You're right, he does redeem himself there. That is worth mentioning. That's the Luke plot. Takes a long time to summarize, even though not a whole lot happens. Lorelai plot. Lorelai tells Suki, I guess, that she, you know, that she told Luke about Christopher, and Suki's like, get out. And then Lorelai is just kind of sad for most of the episode. I guess it kind of ties into the Rory plot, so we can do it together, where Rory is upset that she didn't get to go on her vacation trip to Asia with Logan. And actually, I do need to stop and talk about this conversation between Lorelai and Rory, because Rory, I will admit when I am wrong, Rory does give us some exposition that does prove, Paige, last week, you were right. It was horribly written, but apparently it was the writer's intent to show that part of the reason Rory felt deflated after that conversation with Logan was because she could see that he was being a real grown-up. And he needed space to do that. So I will take the L on that one. You were right, I was wrong, but we were both right that it was terribly written.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. That, you know, my pride bruised there. She's bummed out that she doesn't get to go on this trip to Asia. And she did all this research of places she wanted to go and things she wanted to see and just this huge trip of around Asia she wanted to do. I do not think she could have reasonably done all of that in that time unless they legitimately took their entire summer off to tour Asia, which I guess Logan has the money for.
I think that was the plan, actually.
Maybe that was the plan. That was the plan. Okay, then sure. I guess she could have done all those things. She's upset about this. So Lorelai gets this cool idea of, I'm going to go and I'm going to get a bunch of decorations and stuff, and I'm going to do like a little Asian theme party in the house, which I think is the only context in which your theme for a party just being Asia is not racist. But hold on,
That being said,
hold on, dear listeners, I'm not done yet. So she goes to get party decorations, which is where she runs into Luke in the crosswalk. And then the next time we see her and Rory, she has decorated the entire house in various Asian decorations and stuff. And here is where she walks around the trap door and then just turns around and jumps right into it.
I have a note. Well, there's two notes, actually, that I want to bring up. Was early on in the episode, I wrote down, oh no, the racism. I forgot this episode was racism. And the other note, I mean, actually, you know, not even that the episode is racist. No, the episode is racism. Entirely, I feel like, in a way.
We can get there, but you're not on the wrong track.
No. Okay. So
the other note that I wanted to mention just really quick was,
yeah, go for it.
I wrote down in quotes, Rory-san. And then next to that, I wrote, I hate everything.
Yes, that is accurate, because Rory walks in and sees all of these paper fans and paper lanterns and a giant shrine to Hello Kitty and, like, all
a
these...
A poster of Sandra Oh.
And next to a poster of Mao Zedong, of course, because when I think famous Asian people, I think Sandra Oh and Mao. And everything. So she walks in and she goes, oh, wow, you decorated. And then Lorelai comes out in a kimono with chopsticks in her hair and says, hello, Rory-san, and hands her a kimono. And she explains. And like, it's this thing that's like, it's it's riding that line where, like, if you just scotched the racism down just a teeny bit, it would genuinely be, like, cute and sweet and thoughtful. Because it's like, oh, we're going to do, like, a party where we're going to do, like, a tour around Asia in our house. I'm like, okay. Okay, so first, we'll go to Tokyo and pay honor to Hello Kitty. And she bows in front of the altar to Hello Kitty. And
yep.
Then talks about, like, taking, like, God, what even? Talk about Tai Chi in Tokyo, although Rory at least points out that that's actually Chinese. And then watching a bunch of movies of various Chinese-ness, including Enter the Dragon.
But also Breakfast at Tiffany's, because
Mickey Rooney's super racist.
Mickey Rooney plays. Yeah, and they say it's super racist, but then it's like, oh, this is cute, fun racism. So I don't think they get credit for acknowledging that's racist.
It's one of the things, like, it's the kind of thing where part of the humor and the joke is supposed to be like, oh, haha, Lorelai and Rory are ignorant, and obviously these cultures aren't all just distilled down into these little stereotypes and little pop culture things that they know. And, like, there's a level of validity in that, but you have to thread the needle really carefully, and these writers are not equipped for that. It is very above their pay grade. Like, it's like you said, Paige, it's supposed to be cute, you know? Like, it's racism, but it's cute racism.
Right, and it's not really clear if it's supposed to be, like, they are ignorant because, you know, and they don't quite understand the seriousness of racism, or if it's supposed to be, oh, we're woke liberals, so we know this is racist, so we can make jokes about it being racist, then it's cute and funny instead of being bad.
It's just, the sequence went on for a really long time. I felt like I was trapped in that scene, and it was just really uncomfortable. None of it was crazy overt racism.
As bad as it could have been.
Yeah, like, nobody was wearing any buck teeth or you know, anything like that. But there was also, like, the bit earlier when Suki is teaching Lorelai how to roll sushi, and asks what voila is in French, and Lorelai says arigato karate.
No, she asks what it is in Japanese.
Right, yeah, voila, or whatever they say in Japanese. And Lorelai says arigato karate, which is just like, wow, okay. You know, that's some interesting racism. Anyway, that scene goes on for a while. So in the midst of this incredibly uncomfortable racist scene, the scene gets very uncomfortable for different reasons. Because there's a phone call, and they let it go to voicemail, and it's Christopher. And Christopher... Christopher,
you sweet dipshit.
Christopher doesn't know how voicemail works, apparently, and what you should and shouldn't say on it.
Bit of a tangent. I a while back, did a thing on Twitter, just for shits and giggles, it wasn't a big deal, but I had a thread that was, who the cast of Gilmore Girls would main if they played Super Smash Brothers? And
I remember this.
And my pick for Christopher was Snake, as in Solid Snake, as in Metal Gear Solid. And my points were, he's ruggedly handsome like me. Christopher probably played Metal Gear back in the day. And Christopher disappears just when you need him most and leaves nothing but explosions in his wake. And this was that last part just personified. Because within the scope of this voicemail, he mentions that Luke punched him, that he and Lorelai had sex, and that she hasn't been returning his calls about it, and he kind of wants to turn it into something more, but she's told him it was just a one-night stand. All of this on a voicemail that he knows his daughter might hear.
Christopher is just... he's a very polarizing character in the fandom, and a lot of people hate him, and I get it. But also, on a certain level, I kind of love Christopher, because he's just this walking drama bomb, and he doesn't even mean to be. He just, like, does stuff, and it always causes, like you said, an explosion.
Well, and even more than that, like, do you know who also could have heard the voicemail? Her fiancé.
That's true. Like, he doesn't know what the situation is with Luke. With Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, this didn't occur to him.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So Rory is just slack-jawed hearing this voicemail, and then Rory and Lorelai get into a great big fight, where she's like, "Mom, what the fuck?" And Lorelai's like, I know. And Rory's like, "No, Mom, what the fuck?" And Lorelai's like, I know. And Rory basically says, like, look, when you break, like, when you're heartbroken, you go and you rent an Affair to Remember and you cry and you eat a pint of ice cream and you get a bad breakup haircut. You don't. She says throughout this entire speech is you slept with Dad. She says you don't sleep with Dad, and storms out. Which then Lorelai is completely heartbroken by this exchange, upset, goes to the grocery store, which is where she bumps into Luke to buy the ice cream. And so then at the end of the episode, like, we get that slow pan out creeper shot.
I want to complain about something real quick.
Okay.
You tied, and probably rightly so, the ice cream to the Rory breakup speech. But at the same time, just before that, Lorelai had been saying that she had a deep spiritual need for deep fried ice cream. So it's really unclear if she wants the ice cream because she wants deep fried ice cream and we're going back to this whole horrible Asia party, or if it's a breakup ice cream pint.
That's true. Later, at the last scene, we do see her just eating the ice cream out of the pint. But that's true. They mixed their messages about the ice cream in that scene.
Shouldn't have missed ice cream messages.
That's some sloppy screenwriting there that makes it unclear what the ice cream symbolizes. And so Rory comes home, sees Lorelai crying over the ice cream, and goes and sits down, and they snuggle up next to each other, and it's like, okay, we can work this out. Rory's change of heart, I will explain when we get to the Lane plot. Oh my god, are we almost 40 minutes into this
episode? We've been putting it off long enough, we have to get there.
Okay, sorry, I'll try to do this quickly because we're already almost 40 fucking minutes into this recording. Okay, Lane and Zach are back from their honeymoon. It was horrible. They went to Mexico and they got an Airbnb before Airbnbs existed, which if I was expecting a hotel and I got a crappy Airbnb, I'd be upset too. They got parasites because Zach drank the water like an idiot. They were nowhere near the beach. It was terrible. Nobody had a good time. It was awful.
Also, I just want to say that, yeah, the Asia part of the episode was not the only place where the racism flourished this episode.
This is true. Yeah, Zach described Spanish as speaking in code.
So a guy talking, like, speaking Spanish in Mexico to his friends is talking in code behind Zach's back.
Totally. Yeah, no, that was pretty bad too. You're right. I think the Asia party eclipsed that for me. But you're right that should not go unmentioned, is that the whole Zach's Mexico tirade also not the most culturally sensitive.
Yeah, this is a good episode to kind of bring back a long, quiet Gilmore Ballsy segment. What aged worse?
That is, yeah, no kidding.
But we have to bring out one other strain of racism, and I know you're going to get to it. But in an episode where Rory and Lorelai are flouncing around with fake Asia, Korea is almost never mentioned.
Yeah, you'd think that Rory would know a good bit about Korea, growing up with a Korean best friend.
Who went and spent months in Korea.
Yeah.
But instead, they just had a fun Asia party and then did the, you know, the one actually Asian-American cast member dirty.
Yeah, like, it was basically Asia is China and Japan. Like, they paid lip service to all the other countries, but it was just China and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. All those things worth mentioning. So now Lane is sick with parasites, and Rory's like, hey, how are you? You know, you're sick. I'm sorry. And Lane is like, oh, it's worse. Let's go outside where nobody can hear. And Lane tells us a little bit about her first time. Now, Lane's sex life has been a more frequent topic on this show than I was expecting. And so let's review. Grew up in a very strict Christian household where she was taught that sex was bad and evil.
Which I would like to say again is not the Christian position.
No, at least not the usual one. So despite rebelling against every other aspect of her Christian upbringing, that was the one thing that stuck with no explanation as to why. And so she decided she and Zach were not going to have sex until marriage. Okay. Then on her wedding night, Mrs. Kim gave her the speech about how when you do it with that boy, that, you know, she just needs to get it over with and hopefully you'll only have to do it once. Because she, praying mantis style, ritually murdered Mr. Kim after confirming that she was pregnant. So now we get to the fact that it finally happened. And we learn a couple pieces of information. One, Zach is terrible at sex. Because apparently this sex was terrible. And two, Lane, rather than admit that Zach, a man who 100% is terrible at sex, and anybody who watches the show can confirm this, without needing to know anything about his sex life. There's no sex in this show. This is, I guess at this point, a CW show, right? And before CW got, like, really, really horny. There is no sex whatsoever on this show.
Everybody has sex, but it's mostly off screen.
Yeah, the most we get is an L-shaped sheet after the fact, right? Like, there isn't even heavy making out. There's no sex on this show. And yet, I defy anybody to tell me Zach isn't obviously bad at sex. No white man that selfish is good at sex. So, am I wrong?
I mean, you're not wrong, but it's also interesting. I have
questions about, like, how, like, other men, selfish men of other races are supposedly good at sex. But, you know, moving on.
Also, I just think that, you know, it raises some interesting questions about how, you know, in previous seasons before he got with Lane, we always, like, saw Zach hanging around with, like, a couple of girls clinging to him, being interested,
but the girls kept changing, Kiri.
Yeah, they kept changing, and also that their interest, you can safely assume it was pre-sex, and very possibly they were just assuming he would be good at sex because Rockstar.
Because he's, exactly. After they find out he's terrible at it, they disappear.
Yep.
So these are the things we learn, right? And so Lane is convinced that this is, rather than believing that Zach's just terrible at sex, Lane is convinced that there is a worldwide conspiracy perpetrated by women?
Yeah, that one got to me.
Yeah, that sex
is... We'll talk about that in a minute.
That sex is supposed to be enjoyable for women even though it's horrible. And like, okay, I'm sorry.
No. They never said sex is supposed to be enjoyable for women. They just said sex is good. Like, the conspiracy is that sex is good, normal, and sexy, regardless of gender.
That's true. But, yeah. And yet, sex is in actuality terrible, and it was a massive conspiracy perpetrated by women. Let me say again, apparently women are behind this conspiracy to convince people that sex is normal and awesome and great. And Rory keeps trying to tell Lane, like, no, sex is supposed to be good. Like, if, yeah, okay, your first times can be awkward sometimes, but like, sex is supposed to be good. Have you tried it again? And she's like, no, I'm never doing that again. And then we learn the third piece of information that just, like, adds, it doesn't make the other two things worse, but it adds layers to the other two things that they decided, since it was the first, see, there's so much weight put upon, I'm wondering if Zach actually had sex with any of those groupies, because it sounds like it was going to be both of their first times, and they wanted it to be so special.
Or at least their first time together.
Yeah, that they wanted it to be so special that they wanted to do it on the beach. Now, I know that there is this romantic notion about sex on the beach, right? And it even has a drink named after it. And
the drink's good.
It's a good drink, right? I personally have never had or attempted to have sex on a beach, right? But I think any of our dear listeners who have any experience with either sex or beaches can put two and two together on why it's the kind of thing that sounds sexy and romantic in theory, but in actuality would be a nightmare. Namely, the sand, right? So, one, their sex was bad. Of course their sex was bad. They were trying to have sex on a beach, on top of it also being their first time. Two, Zach, who we're supposed to believe has sexual experience of some kind, heard, let's have sex on a beach, and didn't think, hey, maybe not, at least not for our first time. There's layers to how this was just terrible, right? But Lane is convinced this means all sex is horrible and she's never going to do it again. Lane.
I'm going to have so many thoughts on this in a minute.
Lane, right? Lane, who is, we're supposed to gather, is at least relatively intelligent, jumps to these conclusions and is adamant about them, even after Rory tries to explain to her that, like, no, sometimes it takes a little communication, but sex can be good. She's like, nope, horrible, never doing it again.
I also just want to state, this is a smaller issue, but the show is positioning Rory as some kind of authority on good sex. Rory has had sex with Dean and Logan,
who are both also definitely terrible at sex.
I know. I just need to point that out.
Yeah. So then the kicker to all of this, the showstopper, which unfortunately I did have spoiled for me before we ever even started this podcast. I already knew this happened, but is nonetheless a kicker, is that we find out that Lane hasn't, I mean, sharp listeners may have picked this up already. Lane is not throwing up because she has parasites. Lane is pregnant.
Fuck!
Lane had bad fuck indeed. Lane, exactly, one singular fuck. Very
she
astute
had one
observation,
fuck to give,
Kiri.
And it knocked her up.
One singular fuck. And Lane Kim, or possibly Lane Van Gerbig, is now pregnant and is never going to have sex again. So the cautionary
tale. Or have a band. Let's look into this.
Yeah, the cautionary tale of good Christian girls don't have sex or you'll get immediately pregnant and also sex is bad comes full circle. And your life is over. And Lane experiences exactly what Mrs. Kim warned her would happen.
Yeah, no, like it just was Mrs. Kim standing in front of a mirror chanting Bloody Mary, except it was like, you know, pregnant Lane, pregnant Lane, pregnant Lane until it appeared.
So that's what happened on Gilmore Girls. Oh my. Oh, actually, no, sorry. One more nuance. Lane freaks out that she's going to be a bad mother, and Rory starts talking about how, hey, you're not going to be a bad mother. You have time to figure it out. You're a good person. You'll figure it out. And hey, everyone makes mistakes, even moms. And then she has that click moment of like, okay, fine, my mom made a mistake. And that's why she comes back and comforts Lorelai.
But does not mention that maybe there's somebody who she knows who had a child unexpectedly who might be able to help Lane. This is not mentioned in this whole scene when a girl in her early 20s has been unexpectedly knocked up and is trying to figure out how to deal.
They gave us a little skosh of parallelism with that moment of Rory realizing the connection. That is still more than season 6 ever gave us about anything. Expecting them to draw the Lorelai connection is just asking too much. That is what happened this week on Gilmore Girls. I have been talking for way too long. Oh my god. Paige, what did you think of this week's Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Oh, I'm going to apologize to Dragon Ball fans. This episode of Gilmore Girls is so horrible. It was taking up my entire mind space. You know, I'm just kind of still sick of Gotenks being stuck on the same setting the whole time. He's consistently stuck on the I gotta make it snazzy, even after he finds out that his mom is dead. And I know he's a child, he doesn't really understand or comprehend what's going on, but the fact that they didn't let him have any of that emotion when he was trying to do the right thing and get them out, and don't give him that until he sees it for himself is kind of frustrating. Especially because previous to this, having rage has been the secret to tapping into a deeper level of Super Saiyan. And instead, this is just because he thought it would be cool and fun to tap into a deeper level of Super Saiyan, which could be an interesting character, except that it's not here. It would have been really cool if he had been trying to do Super Saiyan 3 and couldn't quite tap into it, and then learned that his moms were dead, and then he boots it into high gear and can go, because all of this sadness and rage that's been coming out from the fact that, you know, both of their dads are dead, one of their big brothers is dead, now both of their moms are dead, like, that should have some emotional impact, and doesn't until they see it for themselves, and then it's not especially interesting because they've already gone to Super Saiyan 3, so when it's like, oh, what's the vindication of this Saiyan going to be, it's like, I don't care, he already went to Super Saiyan 3, he's not going to go to Super Saiyan 4 at this point, just why was that not tied to his emotional characterization? I'm mad.
I think both of these episodes have really easy ways they could be made better. I'll get into mine for Gilmore Girls when we get to that part.
I'm also just annoyed that there are other things in this episode that could have been interesting that weren't. I think the main one is that Krillin in this episode, and I don't know how much of it is because of Kai cutting, but his characterization is really frustrating in this episode. It's short, but it's there, where when Bulma is freaking out and sad because her son is dead, he's like, oh, you can wish him back with the Dragon Balls, it's fine. And she's like, I know that, I'm not stupid, but why are you letting children do this? Why is this okay? Why is the fate of the world put on kids? Why is my son going to be dead for months? And, you know, arguably she's been there the whole time. She could have stopped this too, but she's a grieving mom. I'll give it to her. And Krillin can't figure out what's going on. And that's acceptable early in the series when he's a single dude who's kind of a bro who just wants to play with his friend Goku and get scared. But at this point, he is a husband and father to two people who are in mortal danger. Like, 18 and Marin could have died this entire time. And he has no empathy or sympathy for a mom who just lost her kid. In this episode, like later in this episode, he's willing to die to give his wife and daughter a chance to get away. But they don't give him any sympathy for Bulma and what she's going through. And then at the same time, don't let him have an equal partnership with 18 where he realizes that maybe she can put Boo off for a second more. And he doesn't have to be reasonable. He's a guy who's in a very tight situation, but it would have been interesting to give us a scene between him and 18 where they were arguing over who goes and who saves Marin.
Mm-hmm.
If you convince me that both of them want to sacrifice themselves because they love the other one enough that they want them to live and they think that they're the better parent to survive for their child and then he just bursts and goes, great, please give that to me. No. It's another episode where they try to convince me that Krillin should be a relevant, important character, but then they don't live up to that potential. And it's so close.
I would love to see the, like, Black Widow Hawkeye from Endgame scene, but it's Krillin and 18. I know it's weaved with ice machines, but you could draw the connection that that conversation with Bulma informed his decision later in that episode. But I feel like...
And that could be good.
You need a moment in between to make that connection, and they didn't have it.
Well, and even if there's a moment that, like, convinces me that what his thinking has been changed, if he sees Marin in danger in some way. Like, I feel like a jerk sometimes on this podcast being like, please put the children in more danger so I can understand the emotional growth of these horrible adults. But put the kid in danger. Give me something. Give me something that says what's going on in Krillin's brain, except you have two totally different characters from scene to scene. And that can work, but they didn't give me much to work with.
Kiri, did you have any thoughts as a relative outsider on this episode of Dragon Ball Z Kai?
I did really like that scene. I think you said it was Bulma with the grieving and the...
Mm-hmm.
Just because I thought it was interesting to bring up the
point. Oh, you got to see Bulma!
Yeah, I know. It was so exciting because if she wasn't going to be in this episode, I had this whole plan. I was going to go on a whole rant about how the Bulma thing is some kind of fandom-wide conspiracy that you've all just decided to pretend she exists for some reason, and I don't know why. And it's driving me completely up the wall. But thankfully, we did see her, so I don't have to do that bit. But
yes, devoted listeners might remember that in both of the episodes previously that Kiri has guested on, there has been no Bulma.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has been ravenously wanting to see the Bulma.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, leaving aside just getting to see Bulma being...
That was a good scene for Bulma.
Yeah, and I just thought it was specifically interesting to bring up the point of how even when a person is aware of what, of the Dragon Balls as like a safety net to revive people with, it doesn't make your loved ones dying less horrible.
Yeah.
Which I think is an interesting and kind of nuanced concept that I haven't really seen explored in a lot of fiction, you know, the idea that even if you have a reset button that can bring someone back to life, there's still a trauma there. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just liked that scene, and I think it added a nice angle in a show that is mostly very go-go-go all the time, and, you know, as Paige has said, that deeper stuff kind of gets glossed over sometime. So, yeah, thought it was a nice moment.
And Dragon Ball Z in particular, especially at this late in the game, does just kind of treat death as a revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
So it is good to have the person who, you know, doesn't experience that. This episode, I believe, is the first and only time Bulma has died. So she's still on the outside of that whole experience, realizing that it must still be traumatic to the people who are more disillusioned to it. Like Krillin is saying, oh, we can switch back the Dragon Balls, because Krillin's died twice at this point. Like, Krillin, this is normal for him. One more time and he gets a free sub. But for Bulma, like, yes, her friends have died and been brought back, but it's still very real for her.
I'm sorry, there's one thing that's completely unrelated that I remembered that I wanted to bring up. When we see Super Saiyan Gotenks 3, he definitely looked like someone's Sonic the Hedgehog Saiyan Sona.
I mean, yes.
Where I hate it. It's even worse than normal Super Saiyan 3. I don't want it. Well, I don't know. They're both pretty bad, but it was terrible,
I'm
going
to say that Gotenks Super Saiyan 3 is better than Goku's.
They're not good, either one of them.
I feel like Gotenks Super Saiyan 3 fits better with his design, and like that is the iconic Gotenks design, is his Super Saiyan 3. Like in Dragon Ball FighterZ, the version of Gotenks that you can play as is Super Saiyan 3 Gotenks.
That's fair, but it still looks more like a Sonic the Hedgehog character gone Super Saiyan.
100%. 100%.
Which is definitely something that was popular in the early 2000s on the internet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's... Kiri said some beautiful things about Grief. Don't care. Want to talk about the art. It was terrible. Gilmore Girls.
Okay. Oh, my God. All right.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. I'm going to talk about the positives in this episode.
Oh, please. Share some positivity in this world.
I'm going to get those out of the way.
After all, you want to get the topic that takes up the least amount of time out of the way first.
As I mentioned, this cold open, beautiful. And I mentioned earlier, and I want to say that there are a couple of little ways that they really could have rehabbed this episode and made it better. And one of them is that I genuinely thought they were going to do this for a second, and they didn't, and I was disappointed. If you look at the structure of this episode, Luke finds out that his now ex-fiance slept with her baby daddy, gets bad news, gets in the car, drives over, punches Christopher, comes back. Then he successively has to deal with TJ being difficult, and then find out that he has to cook for his sister and brother-in-law when they were supposed to be inviting him over for dinner. I posit this episode 10 times better if the pattern of the episode was every time something bad happens in Luke's life, he gets back in the truck and drives back over and punches Christopher again.
I would watch that.
Think about it. Like, okay, yes, it's kind of silly and dumb, but like, it's no wackier than Kirk driving a car through his diner, right? It is the right level of wackiness for where the show is at this point.
Or Kirk setting up a quarantine restaurant outside of Luke's restaurant.
Yes. So, like, okay, right? Just drives over, punches him, and then Christopher getting, like, more and more alarmed each time. Great comedy. And then he finally, like, snaps and calls Lorelai. Could then explain why he totally spills the beans on it. Because he's like, living in fear now that anytime there's a knock at the door, Luke is going to come here and punch him. Right?
I'd watch that.
Like, I'd watch that. That would be great. That'd be funny. It would be, you know, it would speak to just how far gone Luke is at hearing that news. And, like, I don't know, whatever. Yeah, maybe it would technically make Luke less of a likable character, but who gives a shit? That ship sailed. I just want stuff that's going to make me laugh at this point. So, yeah. But anyway, I liked that cold open. I mentioned it a little bit earlier when Rory's talking to Lane and she says, moms can make mistakes too. And she, like, Alexis Bledel clearly has a moment where she, like, you know, stops and realizes something. Like, it's almost a look at the camera moment, except not, because this isn't that kind of show. And there's that connection. And it's not much, whatever. It's a low-hanging fruit, but the thing that we slammed season 6 for repeatedly was the fact that it so often had these parallels sitting right there and refused to draw the connection between them. So this is two episodes in a row now where, like, yes, it was an easy connection. Yes, it was a low-hanging fruit. But you know what? They did it, and that's still better than what we've been getting out of this show, so I'm going to give it credit. That was good. Honestly, I thought the Christopher leaving a voicemail thing was funny. Like, I was like, oh, God damn it, Christopher. Like, that was an amusing fuck-up.
It's just really good because, you know, sometimes Christopher's drama bombs are intentional and it's him, like, causing a scene and being a jerk. Mm-hmm. But other sometimes times, you know, it's just, dick. it's this totally, like, benign foolishness where he's clearly just not thinking, and I almost find that endearing.
Yeah, my note here is Christopher blows up everything and it's only kind of his fault?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was all fun.
You know, I hate to bring back this phrase because I know Paige doesn't like it and I never liked it, but it feels necessary. There was some peak jello pooping happening here.
Oh yeah. Definite pooping and the jello happening all over the place in this episode. Actually, was it poop in the jello? Because pooping in the jello is when everything is going fine and everyone's getting along and everyone's having a nice time. And then one person ruins it, usually one of the Gilmore parents, ruins it because they just can't help themselves.
Mm. Well,
I don't know if that was quite what happened in this episode.
I mean, Lorelai and Rory were having fun during their racism party and then Christopher ruined it. So
right, but that wasn't like out of a pettiness because he just can't help himself. That was just him being a dope.
Oh, I see. Okay, so the jello thing is supposed to be intentional. Okay.
Yeah, pooping in the jello was like when there was a big, wonderful, lavish wedding happening or party going on, and Emily leaned over to Lorelai and said that, you know, it could have been like this all the time, but you just had to run away. Emily just couldn't help herself. There was a nice bowl of jello out there, but she just couldn't help herself, and she had to poop in it. Now, okay. There was jello in this episode, because they ate jello, but nobody pooped in it.
Okay. I'm glad that nuance was defined for me.
There's been less pooping in the jello lately, because frankly, there's been less Emily and Richard lately. And they're usually the ones to do it.
So how's your positivity train going?
Anyway, I think that's basically the end of my positivity train, unless I'm forgetting something.
Okay, before we get into the big things, can I have a couple of little complaints?
Go for the little things. They might line up with some of my little things, but go for it.
Yeah, I have some little things, too.
It's just two little things. One, folks, you need to look at what Zach was wearing in this episode.
Oh, it was real bad.
It was like his mom took him to Kohl's and he said, I want to look like the prep boy, Mom. He had this little hat. He had a horrible brown polo with a green design on it. It was awful. But the thing that bothers me more, as someone who grew up in a small town, roughly the size of Stars Hollow, is when Lane is first telling Rory that she had sex, and she says, we can't talk here. The walls have ears. She doesn't want Brian to hear them talking about having sex or Zach to hear about them talking about having sex. So she goes to the center of town in the town gazebo that's open to anyone who can hear it.
The literal center of town.
One more complaint that before we get into everything, it's really weird watching this and watching Lane talking about how she wasn't ready for sex, how horrible it is, how she's pregnant as a teenager. And like, usually I don't bother thinking about the fact that the actress playing Lane is actually much older than Lane is. But it's weird and incongruous to watch a 30-year-old woman trying to be a 21-year-old woman who wasn't ready to get pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, there are plenty of 30-year-old women who do not feel emotionally ready to be pregnant. That's not the problem. But her trying to play a child who didn't understand sex or pregnancy, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Those are my little things.
Missed opportunity in this episode, the crosswalk scene.
Yep.
Yeah, Luke's a petty little bitch about it, whatever. I'm not interested in talking about that. But when you set up the crosswalk scene, then the implication is supposed to be that they only get a moment to pass each other, but then they end up having an extended conversation in the crosswalk, and yes, it sets up the somebody beeping at them joke at the end, but like that scene would have been better if it was just a brief encounter as they passed each other.
Yep.
So it's like, it's it seems like a little thing, but it's like, it's actually like an important thing about how you're staging your scenes. And you when you've got an entire town, you need to stage your scenes in a way that's conducive to the story you're trying to tell. And
yep.
This was like doing it to lead up to not even really a joke. Like, they didn't even make a joke out of the honking guy. It was just a thing that happened. So it's like, are you playing the scene for comedy or are you playing it for drama? Like, if you're playing it for comedy, sure. They get into an argument and they get into like a petty screaming match in the middle of the crosswalk and hold up the entire town. That could be funny. But they're not. They're playing it for drama. So you end up getting a weird honk joke that doesn't really work. And instead, just this really awkward and uncanny scene of them just standing in a crosswalk talking and nobody seems to think this is strange. And so, yeah. Like, it doesn't quite work. It would have been better if that scene had happened literally anywhere else in town. We talked the Asian thing to death. I don't want to talk or think about that ever again.
Nope.
So, okay, actually, this is one little positive thing that I noticed in my notes that I just want to bring up just so we have something.
Positivity's good.
Yeah, we're clinging. So, I agree that the scene with Liz and TJ doing the whole wormhole quantum physics whatever metaphor was very belabored and bad dialogue. However, there is a moment where TJ mentions string theory, and Luke goes, "What do you know about string theory?" And TJ's response is, "Don't underestimate me. I read. And I watch Battlestar Galactica, and I want to say that that did make me laugh."
That's true. That was good. That was a cute little moment for TJ that I would give more credit if I felt like his characterization was going to be consistent for the next time we see him.
Yeah. And the little complaints that I had were, well, another missed opportunity with Rory. And this is kind of an obvious thing because missed opportunities with Rory's character are just like...
It's the premise of the show at this point.
Yeah, yeah. But I do want to say, you know, about her fight with Lorelai and her total empathy failure there, you know, she just gets so mad at Lorelai for sleeping with Christopher. And it's like, on the one hand, I get it, and I get why she's upset, and it was a mistake, and she's not wrong in most of the things that she says, but it's also like, Rory, my love, could you consider a time when maybe the roles here were reversed and you happened to have some ill-advised sex that you were upset that Lorelai wasn't more empathetic to you about? And you've been on that side of things, and so perhaps you might want to extend a little more compassion to your beloved mother?
Well, and even on that, like, aside from the missed opportunity of Rory could have had empathy, but the extra level here is that she keeps saying you had sex with my dad. And there is a degree of, like, besides things with her dad were bad, then they were, now they're good, and now maybe they're not good anymore, which they do talk about. She talks about, like, earlier in the series, they've talked about, like, how do you feel about me and your dad getting back together? And she says, oh, I dreamed of it. Like, I dreamed of other little girls dream of their parents getting back together, but I also dreamed of you marrying, I forget who it was. It was, like, Charlton Heston or something. And so she keeps saying, my dad. So it's the weirdness of she had accepted Luke as kind of her new stepfather figure that he's always been, because he's been more present in her life than her actual biological father. And then her mom leaving her dad for her biological dad? Like, that's stuff that they could have plumbed, but they just had her keep saying that you had sex with dad.
There's been an unfortunate lack of Rory-Luke interaction during this plot thread.
The last little complaint that I have.
Yeah.
And this is very petty of me, but I just want to say that, so the way that Rory meets up with Lane and finds out that she's pregnant, blah, 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 right, is Rory comes over to Lane's house unannounced, right, because she's upset about the fight with Lorelai and she just wants to talk to Lane about it. But she shows up unannounced is the thing. And so she comes in and Lane's the only one home. And as Rory's walking through the house talking to her in the other room, she says that, you know, she didn't mean to, you know, just drop in unexpectedly. And I wrote this down. The specific line that she has is, "I don't know the protocol for married friends." And I just want
to... Yeah, that was really
weird. I just
want
to state that what you do in that situation is you call. That's the protocol, Rory, you fucking heathen.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also just weird that it's like my married friends. It's like, you have other friends who are presumably having sex. You have other friends who are living with committed partners. You have other friends who are, you know, living with roommates, even.
The chances of walking in on Paris and Doyle are much higher.
Even though they are not married. Like, the married is a weird thread to pull in. But especially because married is much less important than went to the doctor for what she thought was a stomach virus. Like, she's sick. That's the bigger deal. Maybe don't come in and drop your drama on your sick friend without calling.
Yeah.
But let's get into it, guys. Yep. We'll be coming from a few different perspectives. And once again, this is the fair warning to anyone who doesn't want to hear about sex and the fact that two hosts of this podcast have had it with each other. Now is the time to stop. But what the heck?
It was a time. Now, I want to get ahead of myself for a minute and ask one of my questions. I'm guessing that this is not a story pregnancy. This is a Keiko Agena got pregnant pregnancy.
I don't know.
Actually, hold on. Let me do some quick Google fool about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm just going to put it out here right now. If it's a Keiko Agena got pregnant, what do? Pregnancy.
You send her on tour.
You send her on tour, or if you still even want to do Lane Gets Pregnant, then there's a very simple change that you make. You pitch this stupid fucking Lane has terrible sex plotline, and you change it so that it's that they had great sex, and they've been doing nothing but have sex the entire trip. The hotel was actually just like, you know, 20 miles from the beach, so we didn't spend much time on the beach, but boy howdy, we didn't leave that room. Sex, sex, sex all the time. They're loving it. It's having great sex together because Lane is just like rock and roll, right? And so then it would be more believable that she got pregnant if they had sex many, many, many times instead of just once, and pitches this entire stupid plot thread. Another great way to make this episode better.
Yeah, the internet does not seem to think she has children.
Yeah, well, and even more than that, it talks about how she was shocked when the plot happened.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow, so this is just stupid, then.
Yeah, this is just a bad choice, and
okay,
the writers
okay,
should
then
feel
I
bad.
I rescind my previous recommendation of changing the plot line around Keiko Agena's pregnancy, and I submit a new suggestion that one could simply not.
I want to just address this as, like, as someone who, as I've said before, chose to be absent until I got married. I'm really confused by a couple of things here. And I want to be clear as well that we understand that there are people who do not enjoy sex, who aren't interested in sex. There's a whole spectrum of ace people. Like, this is totally separate from what we're given. I don't think we're given the impression that Lane is asexual, and I don't think Gilmore Girls would know how to navigate that if she was. It's really weird where the bad sex comes from, because they don't ever implicate Zach in it, really. Like, Rory doesn't ask, like, was Zach good? It's all kind of blamed on the beach.
Yeah, it's all environmental.
Which, to be fair, like, that environment alone would make for bad sex, even if Zach was the best lover in the world. Even though he isn't.
Right. And, like, it's easy to kind of look at it and guess that he probably didn't pay attention to her needs and it was unpleasant, but, like, the fact that Lane is completely just doesn't even vaguely say maybe Zach and I aren't good at sex, but goes to sex as a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Is like weirdly taking Zach out of the equation in a way that I don't think is fair.
Like, even the unhealthy way to handle that would be, like, I would believe that she might project it inward and say, I'm bad at sex.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, there's something wrong with me. That's a thing that I could see her projecting that inward. But projecting that outward, not onto Zach, but onto the entire world, and specifically women. I'm still caught on the conspiracy comes from women.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, the cultural messaging she's gotten from everyone, including her mother, is that, you know, like, there's a horrible cultural messaging of sex. Women don't like sex and men love sex, which is a really weird view from so many angles. But how would Lane, who's reasonably intelligent, think that, like, the world that we have with rape culture, with objectification, with the play Lysistrata, like, let's just pull out all the things. How is this a woman thing?
Yeah,
and
she thinks women are the ones perpetuating this. Even in the twisted, messed up dementia town world that she's living in, that it's a conspiracy, it doesn't make any sense for it to be women who are perpetuating this conspiracy. Like, it's not just stupid, it's a dumb plot point, but it also just doesn't make any sense, and it makes Lane seem really, really dumb.
And beyond that, it's frustrating that she seems to pull up the reasons that sex is bad, that it's invited. Like, this is all just, like, how Lane is characterized, but she pulls up all these environmental reasons and doesn't implicate Zach, and then doesn't think that maybe she should have sex again somewhere different in a more controlled environment.
Yeah, Rory's like, please, please just try it in a bed.
And Rory, like, repeatedly tells her that it would be different, and she just kind of, like, outright rejects it. And I wish we were given a little more into that, because I could see her saying that sex is bad and she's swearing it off forever really being, I rushed into a marriage that was a mistake, and if I put it on this one thing and say everyone else is lying to me, I don't have to deal with that. That's a completely different take, but they don't really do that. And then they pull in the pregnancy.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate everything.
So now it's, if you, like, the weird thing is, not only does this reinforce the, like, purity culture story of you could have sex once and get pregnant, so keep it locked up until marriage, girls, which has its own problems. Like, once again, was abstinent until marriage. I have a lot of problems with purity culture and how it sells that. But even beyond that, it is also weirdly insulting to people who choose to have, like, to be abstinent until marriage, saying that if you make that choice, like, it's this weird cultural notion we have of, like, you have to try before you buy, where if you get married to someone you haven't had sex with before, the sex will be horrible, you will be trapped in a marriage, you'll be trapped with babies. That is the course you are choosing for yourself by remaining abstinent until marriage. While Rory, who has sex before marriage, has a great sex life with a very selfish man who's just as bad as Zach, if not worse.
Oh, worse.
I'm saying within the world. It's an amazing story arc that manages to be offensive from multiple angles.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a truly baffling thing because, like you say, there are just so many angles to look at it from, and they're all horrifying, and it's just, my thing is just, like, this show hates Lane so much.
Mm-hmm.
It hates Lane so much. And the thing is, when the show does something, you know, that shows, once again, it hates Lane, because it's been doing that for seasons, usually my automatic gut reaction is to think, for fuck's sake, Amy. And, you know, I do that when I think about Lane's pregnancy. I automatically think, for fuck's sake, Amy. But no, it's not Amy's fault at all. She's in the clear here. It's just that every writer that has come across Lane Kim just hates her for some reason. And I really don't understand it, because, you know, as a viewer, I love Lane. I think she's a charming character. I think that, you know, she's played by a great actress. She's, Lane is great. And there are whole articles on the internet about how Lane, honestly, becomes a more lovable character than Rory, which is true.
Oh, easily. Easily. I know that at the beginning of this podcast, I made jokes about Lane, and, like, I regret those now, because having watched the show for a while, I see what everybody means. Like, no, Lane is actually kind of the most likable person on the show.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that even in the beginning, yes, it's absolutely true that her character was very extraneous in those early seasons, but even then, you know, it's not the problem that a lot of the characters have on the show, where, you know, it's not like, you know, she's a dick, it's not like she's an asshole, you know, they just didn't know what to do with her. But then when they did figure it out, she became such a compelling presence on the show, and she was so fun, even if her storyline was still very detached, and that was just always going to be a problem. Fine, at least, you know, she was really likable and engaging, but the show just hates her and keeps having all these bad things happening to her. And I understand that you have to have a character encounter difficulties in order to have conflict and a plot and make it interesting and have them grow, blah, blah, blah. But there are ways to do that without writing a story that just hates the character.
Yeah, like, I have mentioned before in conversations between us, but I don't think I've mentioned on the mic, honestly, I'm firm in my belief, and I think most Gilmore Girls fans who are listening would probably agree with me, Lane deserved a spinoff way more than Jess did.
And once again, Lane is a more interesting character. I hate that she's been done dirty like this, but I would be interested in a woman who was trying to start a band and left her deadbeat husband. This is my fantasy version. Left her deadbeat husband. Or, you know, starts a band and tries to live her dreams. That could be interesting, but instead we get what's going to be Lane for the rest of the season. Sorry, Grant, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
I don't remember everything that happens, but I mean,
it can't be
Lane's
good.
Pregnant.
Yeah,
you're going to play that
good
out.
This is where we're starting.
The thing is, right, is that I had another episode that I also suggested doing, much for the same reasons, because they're both things about Lane and about her arc and are interesting to talk about. And the other one is at the end of the season, listeners, right? The idea of Lane having an unexpected pregnancy, okay, that is not horrible on a base level. You know, there's a lot of... Yeah, right. Like, you could make that interesting. You could make that a good story. And, you know, it's a lot of the surrounding stuff about it that's bad. You know, like, the fact that the sex is so horrible and her relationship with Zach is horrible and blah, blah, blah. That is all just unnecessarily shitting on her in a way that is just... It's... We've discussed it. But, you know, the idea of a girl who has ambitions and, like, wants to become a musician, you know, and then she deals with an unintended pregnancy. That is a dynamic that could be really interesting and could grow the character in such a fascinating way. And the way you do that is to have the character, you know, figure out how to balance her reality with her dreams. And that is how you make that interesting and how you make it a good storyline. And that is not what they do. They just...
Imagine the alternate timeline where she gets pregnant with Dave's baby.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
And just, like, the show has a thing where it, like, it is a show that is loved by women. You know, that's pretty clear. And it's a show that a lot of us watched when we were at an impressionable age. And because of that, it's usually called, it's not quite called feminist, but the show has raised a lot of women who went on to become feminists, and it was a show full of strong female characters on the surface.
It actually...
That the show keeps knocking up and tying to a home. Like, that's the whole point of the show with Lorelai.
Just like Dragon Ball.
Like, exactly. It's what is happening to Lane now, and because it seemed like it's what happened to Emily, even though that's what she chose, and the question is, how is it different when that's what you choose? It's just all kind of reinforcing that women will eventually be driven back to traditional roles. And it's like, okay, really? Okay. Like, there, to be clear, there is nothing wrong with women being pregnant, but so much of the theme is women being trapped by pregnancy, children, and the trappings of femininity in a way that doesn't seem conscious. Like, that's an interesting story if you know what you're doing, but they don't.
And it's just so frustrating because, you know, Lorelai is like the best case scenario here. And, you know, the most purposeful and intentional in how, you know, unintended pregnancy caused a lot of pain for her very early in her life. But she also, like, built this really beautiful life in Stars Hollow out of it. Like, when you think about it, Lorelai did amazing for a pregnant teenager.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Became such a successful adult. And I'm not saying that every female character who gets pregnant has to then have this perfect life or whatever. You know, obviously there are going to be complications and there's going to be like ways that it goes sideways. But, you know, that's what makes it so upsetting is like the unintentional recurring theme is that like with Lane, pregnancy is like this opportunity destroyer. And obviously that is a real story that can be a thing in real life, but you have to handle it so delicately if that's what you're going to write. And that's clearly not what they're intending to do here.
So not only do all women get pregnant and it ruins their lives. And it's especially interesting because I'm 99% sure that the Sherman Palladinos don't have kids.
Huh.
Like, they chose to have their careers be showrunners. And that's not really... Let's see.
Yeah, I don't see any children on the Wikipedia entry.
Yeah, no, so they have... And I'm pretty sure I've listened to an interview where they talked about it, but where the life they've chosen for themselves doesn't really... It would be harder to have that life with kids, and so it's... I don't want to put words in her mouth, especially because she wasn't even on this season. But it's almost like saying, you have to choose one of them. We chose right. You chose wrong. Sucker. And I don't know about the showrunners on this season, but it's just, it is so frustrating.
It should be said, I don't know if you guys have talked about this yet, but several of the creative minds behind season 7 of Gilmore Girls do in fact go on to be creative minds involved with Jane the Virgin.
But that is worth bringing up still when it's a show that's all about how getting unexpectedly pregnant changes your life. Like, it's obviously a topic that the showrunners are interested in, especially if you look at the fact that Amy Sherman Palladino's follow-ups were Bunheads, which is about a woman running away to a small town and getting kind of trapped there and then learning to love it. Well, the other thing is that the other show she did before Mrs. Maisel, where kids are mainly forgotten and pushed to the side, they're just kind of there. But it's The Return of Jezebel James, which is about a successful children's book editor who can't have kids, so she asks her younger sister to carry her baby for her. So there is a lot of fascination with kids and what they mean and what they do to your career and what you choose when you choose a career or when you choose children or don't make that choice and have that choice made for you. There's a weird fascination here. But it's so bad.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
Like, once again, there are ways that it's totally okay to not like or not be interested in sex. This is not it, fam.
Same with, yeah, it's just, oh, yeah. Any other thoughts on this horrible, horrible plot thread?
It's horrible.
Screams into the sky.
I think we can move on. Do you have any questions for me about Dragon Ball Z Kai, either of you?
Yeah, why don't they just give Boo a lot of candy or tell him that there's candy on the other side of the hyperbolic time chamber? Like, so many problems could be solved by just filling Boo up with sugar.
I'm not sure if Super Boo, I'm not sure if this form of Boo would be fooled by the look behind you trick.
I don't know. Like, it's an infinite void. They could tell him that there's a town about 10 miles away that has candy, and by then that gives them some time to... Well, I guess he's super fast. Never mind.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. Like, original Stay Puft Marshmallow Man Majin Buu would fall for that. But Super Buu is just a little bit more intelligent and a little bit shrewder. I don't think that would work.
But we do know he doesn't
make... As opposed to why they don't just give him candy...
Yeah, again, we know he doesn't make as good of candy as he can find other people making. And there are still stores intact to the point where there's milk. We saw that with Satan in this episode.
I think that, again, that would work with the original Majin Buu, but this Buu does have more of a sadistic streak where, yeah, part of it's the candy, but part of it is that he revels in the chaos and destruction.
Fair.
So I don't know if that would hold him for at least as long as it would the original Majin Buu. Do you have any other questions?
I don't, Carrie, do you?
This isn't a question, it's just an observation, but there is a brief little moment in the episode where we see regular Boo with the dog, I think it was. And yes, I just wrote down this, to go with my first note, my last note about the episode was, oh no, regular Boo's design is fucking horrifying too.
Yep, it is.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad it's you guys and not me that have to watch this. I'm sorry. That's nothing about the quality of Dragon Ball Z. I respect it so much. There are many things about it I have enjoyed in what little I've seen, but I'm so glad that I don't have to see these hideous nightmare fuel aliens.
Oh, I'll send you more. There's more. It gets worse. He gets a nose eventually, and that doesn't make it better.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Okay. I have only one question about Gilmore Girls this episode. I have two, but I already asked the Keiko Ajina question. I have a question here about Liz. So late last season, we found out that Liz is pregnant. So like Luke found out that Liz and TJ we're going to have a baby. And then it was the next episode. Luke and Lorelai broke up. Lorelai had sex with Christopher. These last couple episodes have all taken place in the span of a couple days. So the time between Liz telling Luke that she's pregnant and now in universe time is like 2 weeks tops, probably more like a week and a half. Liz is already showing, and I know that's because the actress herself was probably pregnant, and so she started to show over the course of the thing, but you'd think then they wouldn't write Liz into an episode that was supposed to take place. Like, I know there's no good answer, and I know this is me being nitpicky, but I have frustrations with that.
Yeah.
I have no logical explanation for the pregnancy and why it moves so fast, but can I just add on to my everybody gets pregnant theory that Suki, a chef who has been content with her world-class powers to stay at a small inn, and Liz, a former wild child who settled down and moved back into her hometown, bought a house, and settled down with her husband, both have happy, normal pregnancies? They're rewarded by the small town gods for following the rules.
Oh god, I didn't even think of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hate it.
And that's why her pregnancy is going so quickly. Next question.
You got a think piece on your hands there. I think those are all my questions. Who knows who they want to swap this episode?
Oof. I want to swap Lorelai and Piccolo.
Okay.
Boo doesn't care that Lorelai is crazy racist and her entire Asia party confuses Japan and China and ignores most of the rest of Asia. What Boo would care about is that Lorelai has styled herself as a candy chef. And if she keeps that sushi candy coming, like the dessert sushi coming, he will still keep eating it. Meanwhile, Piccolo would probably go and punch Christopher in the face after hearing that message and would be better at helping Rory cope with her sadness about Logan because he would once again go to London and punch Logan in the face. And then when she told him eventually about Lane's pregnancy, he would probably punch Zach in the face. Honestly, like, Piccolo's not necessarily the best dad for traditional worlds that don't involve killing people on the regular, but look, I got three people punched. I'm gonna take it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I want to swap Krillin and TJ.
Okay.
I feel like Krillin would know how to handle my buddy just broke up with his girlfriend. Like, that is stakes that Krillin is equipped to handle right now. And I think that he would be in a better place to help Luke work through that whole situation than TJ is. Also, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Krillin probably does all of the cooking around the house. Because 18 does not strike me as the type to do all the cooking and cleaning.
It's true.
So he'd be able to better handle the feeding Luke part of things. And then at the same time, TJ, I think, most frankly, on the Dragon Ball side, would be mostly unchanged, because TJ would also be the one to be like, oh, I'll go hold them off, women and children get to safety, and then immediately get turned into chocolate. And yet, I think he would be more emotionally, weirdly, I think both of them would be better emotionally equipped for the opposite's problems, because I think he would do a better job of handling Bulma being upset about Trunks being dead. Because while obviously just hug the person is not going to fix my son is dead, it is still better than it's okay, we'll just wish him back.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, actually, yeah, TJ and Krillin. Kiri, do you know who you want to swap?
I want to swap Goku and Lain.
Okay.
Because the thing is that Goku didn't really do a lot this episode. He actually hung out on the sidelines, which seems to be unusual for him. And I just want to swap him and Lain so Lain can have a nice, largely restful day. Just let her take the day off. Like, I know that in the context of Dragon Ball Z's plot, you know, stressful things are happening around Goku, but he doesn't have to be directly involved in them for once, so just let Lain chill out. You know, Goku was just doing his whole positivity, hopeful thing for most of it, so he wasn't even in that bad of a mood about it. Just let Lain sit down and chill out and fully believe that everything's going to be just fine. And meanwhile, I don't know what Goku would do in Stars Hollow or about the disaster of his new marriage with Zack, but I am sure it would be entertaining as opposed to infuriating, so that would be a step up for us as viewers.
I posit that the Supreme Kai would actually be a better baby daddy than Zack.
And the thing is, actually, Goku would be a very good swap-in for Lain, especially if it's temporary. Goku, even though he isn't a great husband, he's still a better husband than Zack.
Mm-hmm.
He understands that Zack would probably be a loving and enthusiastic, if incompetent, father to Lain's kids. So he probably could explain how to be a slightly better enthusiastic dopey dad. And at the same time, we know that Chi-Chi's had sex with him at least twice. So he would probably have some empathy over being a partner who's completely uninterested in sex, because he seems to be. And he would probably have advice for Zack on how to make things better for her.
Oh my gosh, you guys. I just had a thought. Is Goku just Zack with an improved attitude?
I was going to say, I think that Goku could actually be a good role model for Zack. Because, yeah, I think you're right. Goku is just Zack without the chip on his shoulder.
Wow.
Yeah. And with a little more
self-esteem.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We are so galaxy-brained in this podcast recording tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's,
it took 2 hours to get there, but we are there.
Wow. Okay. Well, I don't think we're going to top that. So I'm going to say that is Gilmore Ball Z for this week. Kiri, thank you so much for joining us one last time as we begin our victory lap. That's what we're choosing to call it. We're staying positive.
I loved it dearly, even though we were very upset for a lot of it.
That's the motto of this podcast at this point. So you all can look forward to more returning guest hosts just like Kiri. Over the course of this season, we've got a bunch more in store for you, people you've heard in the past and hopefully enjoyed because they're coming back. Until then, you know where to find us. Our Facebook is Gilmore Ball Z. Our Twitter is at Gilmore Ball Z. Our email is GilmoreBallZ@gmail.com. And our WordPress is GilmoreBallZ.wordpress.com. Go there, send us a comment, shoot us an email, tweet at us, whatever. We love to hear from our fans. Also, if you have not already, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Facebook, Podbean, I think is another one. Wherever it is you get your podcasts, if you can rate and review us, do it. And also, just a reminder, for a limited time, now through U.S. Election Day, we are matching donations 2-1 for the Center for Common Ground through the Gohan and Rory Fund. Go to our WordPress, go to the Gohan and Rory Fund page, you'll find the instructions there, and if you give specifically to that charity, then we will match twice what you gave, so your money gets tripled, and it gets applied to bonus episodes and individual rewards. Who knows? One day it might even be another bonus episode with Kirion. We'll see what ends up coming down the pipe. If they end up doing Traveling Pants 3, you know we gotta do it.
Oh, yes.
So, with that, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next Saturday. So, can Gotenks hold out long enough for Gohan to feign relevance? How are things going to get even worse for our girl Lane? And who has a more inflated sense of their sexual abilities? Zack or Yamcha? Man, we've been dunking on Yamcha a lot. I kind of feel bad for the guy. Anyway, find out next time on Gilmore Ball Z.